You may have marveled at landing of the Curiosity rover on Mars this week and at the room full of cheering scientists who made it happen. Or maybe you're watching the astonishing athletic performances each night that are part of the pageant that is the Olympic Games. In either case, the level of teamwork in evidence is extraordinary. Teamwork is key in many sports and increasingly seen as the key to success in science and in business. Today on Please Explain, we are going to talk about the art and the science of teamwork. I am joined by Dr. John Krakauer, a professor of neurology and neuroscience and director of the Center for the Study of Motor Learning and Brain Repair at Johns Hopkins, and Dr. Scott Wiltermuth, assistant professor of management and organization at the USC Marshall School of Business. And we'll also be taking your calls at 212-433-9662, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. So we're going to begin with Dr. Wiltermuth. First of all, thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Is there a good working definition of teamwork that we should have in our minds as we talk about the subject today? A team is a group with a shared purpose. Is that not right?
No, that is absolutely right. Anytime you have a group of three or more people working toward a common goal, that can be considered teamwork. Some people will say that teams are groups in which members take on specialized roles and responsibilities. I'm not sure that's always the case, but the most salient aspect is that people are working towards a common goal.
Does our understanding of group dynamics illuminate team dynamics? For instance, do most teams form in a particular way, in a pattern, with different people naturally taking on different roles within the group?
Absolutely, and it isn't always the most rational of processes. Within groups, we'll have people come to the fore and take on the leadership roles, but it's often not the people who are going to be very effective leaders. It's going to be people who are tall, people who have strong jawlines, who are good-looking, who are naturally extroverted. So at the early stages of teams, you'll see people like this coming to the fore. Later on, you might get more of a concern about competence, and people will start to identify the most effective leaders, but often it's pretty silly characteristics that will make someone the leader of a team or a group.
So if you're short, that's not an advantage.
It's absolutely not an advantage, no. If you think about the presidents that we've elected as a country, they tend to be over 6 feet tall.
Well, what about Napoleon?
That's a good point. People say that he felt this grudge, but then others have said that people on the whole were shorter in that time, so he wasn't outside of the norm. certainly it's possible.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe the word leader slash dictator goes with that physical type.
Right, exactly. But even in more friendly groups and teams working on you know, just fun projects, we'll look to somebody who is strikingly good looking or somebody who is very tall to take the lead.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And if you think about it from an evolutionary perspective, perhaps it makes sense if our team goal is hunting lions or protecting ourselves. But
right.
If it's preparing a PowerPoint presentation, it's a curious choice.
My second question is for Dr. Krakauer. Welcome, first of all.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for being here, at least your voice. So many of us are watching the Olympics, and some of the team sports are particularly compelling. And my question is, are athletes working at this level just different neurologically than the rest of us? Are their brains different as well as the rest of their bodies?
Well, yes. I mean, we definitely think that what sets athletes apart is lots of practice, and we definitely think that no question that they have very fit cardiovascular systems, that they're very muscular, but when we think about skill, we are speaking primarily about changes in the brain that accrue over, you know, years of practice.
But what happens when a group of people are organized? Is there something special going on, you know, between them and all of their brains, something that binds them neurologically?
Right. So we don't know. I mean, it's very difficult to do that kind of study scientifically. In other words, you know, you'd have to think of a way of being able to monitor everyone's brain at the same time while they're engaged in a team activity, and we don't have the technology right now to do that. But, you know, we can have guesses. I mean, we know that athletes become very good at anticipating, in a sense, modeling the responses of their opponents. So we have every reason to think that you can also, through lots of practice with your colleagues on a team, is you learn to anticipate what they're going to do. And through being able to anticipate each other, you work together better as a team. So it's probably likely that you, in a sense, develop a kind of model of your teammates.
Okay. Dr. Wiltermuth, you and your colleagues found that synchronizing people's activities seemed to cause them to be more empathetic with one another. Can you talk about your study a little bit and how you set it up and what you found?
Sure. So what we did is we had a bunch of college students come into the lab, three at a time. And we played a summer camp game with them. Many of your listeners will probably remember, you know, being at summer camp, moving cups around in time with, you know, other people. So in one condition, we taught them a little sequence, and we had them move cups, these red solo cups that are, you know, most people associate with beer at this point. But we had them move these cups in time with the music they were listening to. And everybody was wearing headphones, and everybody was listening to a different version of O Canada. And the reason we chose O Canada is not an affinity to Canada, but we just wanted to see if people could bond to an out-group anthem if they were behaving in synchrony. So in one condition, people are moving these cups at their own tempo because their music is playing at different tempos. In another condition, everybody was listening to the same version of O Canada, and it was therefore at the same tempo, and they move the cups together. And it's very strange, but this, when you move things in time with other people, when you have this feeling of synchrony, it just creates this warm glow, and people start to like each other more. We had them complete economic exercises afterwards, and not only did they report liking their counterparts more, but they were more willing to sacrifice their own interests for the benefit of the group after they had behaved in synchrony with other people.
So perhaps we should do this exercise in the Senate or in Congress.
Oh, God, yeah.
As a warm-up before they discuss their, you know, what's on the table.
I think they'd need about 3 years of it to create enough.
Well, that'd be interesting. It'd be interesting for them to have to do something all together before they start attacking each other.
I think it really would help. I think there are a lot of strategies that companies already use. Japanese companies, for example, will have employees do calisthenics in the morning, and that creates sort of a group mind and a sense of empathy for one another that seems to be lacking in today's Congress.
I'm John Turturro. I'm here for Leonard Lopate, and this is Please Explain, about the art and science of teamwork. And if you want to call in, the number is 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Dr. Krakauer, what are some of the ideas, whether you agree or not, about what might be at work neurologically when people are moving in the same way, at the same time, doing the same thing?
Right. So there are a number of... Can I unpack that question a little bit?
Sure, you can unpack it as much as you'd like.
Right.
I'm trying to sound as intelligent as I can be, asking you these very complicated scientific questions.
I think it's important to sort of distinguish a number of things. I mean, the example we just heard about people getting a warm, fuzzy feeling by performing in synchrony, you know, it really just raises the broader question of why we like watching all kinds of synchronous activity. I mean, we like watching dance performances. We like watching sports. I mean, we for reasons we do not understand, we like watching synchronized motor activity. Otherwise, there wouldn't be dance performances and thrilling car chases and things like that. So we don't know why there's pleasure in motion and synchrony. Now, whether pleasure itself just leads to better teamwork is probably how that's working. It's not the synchrony per se that's important. It just happens to be pleasurable and people cooperate better when they're happy. With respect to what do we know about how the brain actually works to anticipate and understand what other people are doing, there are two answers I think one could give. One is that, you know, for example, in a school of fish, or you watch the Canadian geese flying overhead and they all seem to be perfectly organized in formation, it may well be that when you're synchronized like that, then it's easier to detect any deviation from the behavior. If everyone's doing something differently, it's going to be more difficult to keep everybody in formation. Whereas if everyone's doing the same thing and there's a slight disruption or ripple or change, then that can be rapidly detected and changed. So that might be an example of an advantage to synchrony. In terms of how the brain works to do that, I mean, as I was saying before, there's evidence that the better you are at a sport, the better you are at predicting very early what your opponent is going to do. So, for example, there's something called anticipatory pickup. So if you're an expert tennis player, you will know where the ball is going to be served just by the rotation of the torso of the server before they've even hit the ball.
Right.
So you just get very good at picking up subtle cues earlier on about what's about to happen. So you can imagine if you're in a team where you've been practicing with your colleagues for months and years, you can very quickly detect what they're about to do, where they're going to throw the ball, where they're going to be in a couple of seconds, and that obviously is going to lead to a superior performance by the team. Whereas if you are suddenly like the dream team thrown together, you know, you have to rely on extraordinary talents on the part of the individuals to compensate for the fact that they don't play together very much.
Right. Absolutely. It's interesting when I think about teams, you know, functioning as a team, and I think about, well, how this infiltrates their interactions outside of the team, you know, in a situation that isn't team-oriented or not sports-oriented, because lots of athletes have had very difficult adjustments, but maybe that's a whole different topic.
I think it probably is.
It probably is, I think, but yeah. It's something that always interests me.
Well, I think part of it is that people get a real sense of identity and a sense of belonging from that team, and when you take that away from them, not only is the structure of their day gone, but their whole sense of what they are
right.
And who's in their universe is just it's taken from them, and so they're at a loss.
That's right.
And maybe one could say that, you know, we are social animals, and a lot of people have written about the fact that there are fewer and fewer opportunities to work in groups, right? I mean, we have a very atomized kind of existence.
Absolutely.
And it may well be that sports is one of the few times where people can actually work as a group or a team.
So to what extent are we, as human beings, hardwired to work together? And because that's an interesting, you know, because you're saying people becoming more isolated in a new technology, you know, with all the technology that we have today.
Dr. E.O. Wilson of Harvard has just written a really interesting book, and he's previously written all sorts of interesting articles about ants and their parallel to humans. And it's really the coordination and the sense of teamwork that both ants have and humans have that have allowed us to be so successful in taking over the planet. There are billions and billions and billions of ants, and humans have clearly had a dominant role over the last 5,000-6,000 years. And so I tend to agree with him that there is something hardwired, and it's something that has allowed us to be successful as a species.
This is John Turturro, and I'm here for Leonard Lope. I'm speaking with management and organization professor Scott Wiltermuth and Dr. John Krakauer, professor of neurology and neuroscience at Johns Hopkins. We're talking about teamwork, how it works, why you can find it in so many different settings. On this week's Please Explain. And if you have a question, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We'll be back with more after a break. Hi, I'm John Turturro. I'm here for Leonard Lopate, and we're talking about teamwork and how it works for Please Explain. And we're going to go to our callers. Our first caller is David from Cape May, New Jersey.
Hello?
Hi, David.
Hi, John. How you doing?
I'm fine.
I'm starting a company called Ensemble Force because for 30 years I've been facilitating groups. I'm an actor and a writer, and I using theater activities to build trust in a group, first, you know, with physical, but then emotional, by getting people to share moments that are important to them and having everybody else listen. I've found that can build trust and then encourage the group to take risks that they might not otherwise do. So I've been doing this with teachers and with assistant principals and staff members of not-for-profits at shelters and other places. And it often can get people to see each other a little bit differently to help face challenges and work together a bit more creatively and hopefully communicate more effectively. And I really do believe that trust has a lot to do with that in the taking of risk. And I was wondering what your two people think of that.
Dr. Krakauer, would you like to begin?
Well, I mean, again, I think if I just take a step back, I think we're sort of collapsing a number of things all at once, right? There's a difference between a team and a company, let's say, like Google, where the goal is creativity and coming up with something new. Then there's the idea of team in a sport, where the idea is to get perfect coordination to win. And then there's the idea you've just come over with, which is somehow if a group is there, you can sort of summon up the courage to do something you might not otherwise do. Now, some people have actually argued that it's just that dynamic, which can be good in the scenario you've just come up with, that leads to sort of conformity and lack of creativity in a group dynamic, because people tend to all do the same thing, they'd start to conform, and it's basically a form of peer pressure. So the group dynamic, whether it's good or bad, depends what you want to happen. If you want people to do something that everyone else is encouraging them to do, then that's one thing. If you want to do something that's original and you want everyone to think in their own way and contribute, it might not be a good thing. So you're describing a particular kind of dynamic which might work for what you're doing, but it might actually stifle creativity if you were doing it in a company. And as when it comes to sports, I don't think it's actually the relevant dimension.
All right. Well, thank you, David. And we're going to go on to our next caller, Anne Marie, also in New Jersey.
Anne Marie? Hi, I hope that I'm able to explain my question clearly. My question had to do with the comment from one of the speakers about people being increasingly atomized, but at the same time hearing from all of you that having opportunities to do things together is actually makes us feel good and also maybe makes us more effective. And I'm wondering, actually thinking about the U.S. versus Asia, because I'm reminded of a conversation with an intern in my office recently. The intern was Chinese. She came to the U.S. for college. She had before that, you know, been born and grew up in China. And she was talking about her adjustment to school here and how one thing that was very different was how individualistic we were here and how thinking about other people was something that was more rewarded in China. So if you want me more details on that, you can ask. But what I'm wondering is, are there things that we can be doing differently as society to create more opportunities for people to do things together so that we have, you know, a better sense of being connected to other people and are maybe more empathetic and hopefully more effective as well?
I think there are. I think the way we design our communities can have a big impact on that. Obviously, the car has been instrumental in the development of the U.S., and I think that's probably led to an individualistic culture because we value space, we create space, and that space that we've created cuts down our social interaction. I think at the community level, getting people to live closer to one another, I think one of the things that people like about New York is the more regular contact
with people than you might get in other parts of the country, certainly than in L.A. where I live. But I also think at the organizational level, as frustrating as we can find some group interactions, if we can get involved with groups more, we might feel less lonely and we might feel more connected, and there are some instances where that sense of connection can make us more effective.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. I have a question. There are people who say that there are disadvantages as well, that teamwork is not always the best strategy in every situation. What are the vulnerabilities of teams? And what about individuals? Are they less advantageous or less satisfying spots in the team?
Well, a lot of it depends upon the context, as Dr. Krakauer was alluding to. Oftentimes we can get into groupthink. So if we all really like each other, we start to think along the same lines. And John, if you suggest something, we may agree with you because we feel like if you're saying something, it's probably valid. And so you don't get a lot of benefits of teams. And I think anybody who's been in corporate meetings or any sort of meetings can quickly realize that it's hard to coordinate, not just in terms of timing, but people have different issues, different working styles. And so teams aren't always the most efficient way to get things done. Often we have redundant effort. And moreover, when you add people to a project, you can get this phenomenon called social loafing. And the idea here is that if there are five people working on a project, I can slack off because I know that somebody's going to do the job. And if all five of us are doing that, or any number of us are doing that, we're not going to be as efficient as we may think.
Yeah, I mean, I think what, I'd be interested to hear, what you think. But there's a distinction to be made between the time frames that you're talking about, right? In other words, if you have one of the things that's been shown when it comes to creativity is that that teams can be creative if you have what they call diversity in domains of expertise. In other words, if you have people who are very good at certain areas and others in other areas, then they come together and you get a synergy because people bring different kinds of expertise to the table. Mm-hmm. Now, then you can imagine, that over months to years of people working on their own and then coming together and getting criticisms that you develop, things like Pixar or quantum mechanics, right? That's very different from having people sitting around a table in a committee having to solve the problem right there and then by all talking with each other, right? Then it's going to depend on whether they have different areas of expertise and whether one person can drive the conversation in one direction and everyone else follows. Mm-hmm. And then in a sport, what you're really doing is playing out what your coach has already told you to do offline, and you're basically just playing out scenarios that you learned offline. So it's extremely important to decide what time frame you're talking about when you're asking about the downsides or the upsides of teams. And a creative long-term project at Google is very different from a committee meeting that lasts an hour with a lot of people around a table trying to decide what's going to happen. And that's, again, very different from what's happening in a sport that may last 15 minutes.
Right.
So I'm not trying to be pedantic here, but it's
you're being very clear.
To distinguish between what one actually means. Are you at the beginning of a project, or you're already all very good, and now you have to play it out?
I agree.
Okay, that's very, very precise. We have John. He's our next caller. John, thanks for being on WNYC.
Hey, John, thank you. John, I guess my question is, if there's so much joy in synchronization and cooperation, why is dissension so rampant? Why do people find so many opportunities to break away from others and evoke things like war, for example, which is in some ways a massive form of lack of synchronization?
Gentlemen?
Well, part of it is that people want to have a sense of themselves as an individual, which I know sounds directly contrary to this, but there's this concept of optimal distinctiveness. So you want to contribute to a team, you want to contribute to a group, and at some point you don't get a lot of credit for just agreeing and going along, even though it feels pleasurable. you want to feel like you're doing something unique, and so you voice a different opinion. In terms of warfare and grand forms of attention, there a lot of that stems from an in-group bias. We really like people who are already like us. So yes, it may be. Maybe if we could encourage countries and groups of people to socially coordinate with others and get in sync, we'd reduce the incidence of warfare. There are some people who espouse the theory that there is always going to be an out-group because there's always, we're always going to create this in-group that we favor relative to the out-group.
The other thing I would add is that it's just very difficult. It takes practice to be synchronized, right?
Absolutely.
In other words, you know, it takes a lot of effort to do something well. I mean, you can see that people love to synchronize when people do the wave, you know, at sporting events, right? They love to see that wave ripple around the audience. But, you know, how many opportunities are there to really do something synchronous? It takes a lot of effort to put yourself in a situation and practice for months and years to actually derive the benefits from it. So I would argue that we just don't really create the motivation or the incentive for people to devote their time to doing something. I mean, hobbies are sort of going out of style.
Well, thank you. Thank you, John. A question I have is, what's involved in adding new members to an existing team?
Dr. Krakauer, do you want to take that? Or?
I don't really. I mean, it's not really an area of mine. I mean, I've certainly added people to my teams, but it's not something that I have any way studied. I can't really speak in any authority.
So I stumped you on that one. That. So I stumped you. So now I feel much better, actually.
So I can speak to that a bit. There's a process of enculturation such that. Especially if you have power within the team and you have a new person coming to the team, you really want to encourage that person to voice their opinion and to get comfortable quickly, because the natural default is probably that they'll be shy.
Right.
And we have these dynamics of dominance and submissiveness, so that if somebody acts dominantly with you and you want to get along with them, you act submissively. So that's one aspect that's really important in adding members to the team, is just encouraging them to make their presence felt right away. With that said, when people join new teams, those who are submissive initially are seen more positively oftentimes than are people who act dominantly right off the bat.
Right. We're going to go to Andrea in Brooklyn.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks, John.
Welcome.
My question is actually in reference to the first point made by one of the speakers. It was about the role that being considered attractive plays in selecting leaders in groups or teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if anyone could comment on the role that gender plays in that, because my sense is that being considered attractive might affect men and women differently in a team context or in a work context, and just wondering if any of the research has dealt with that at all.
Sure. So some of the research has, in fact, dealt with that. There tends to be a main effect for gender, such that people prefer male leaders right off the bat. We look to the males more than we look to females right off the bat. Attractiveness turns out to be important both for men and for women. I'm not sure if it's more important for women than for men. I've read some research suggesting that it's sort of curvilinear, such that if you're an attractive woman, that's great. That will help you to be seen as a leader. But if you're super attractive, that can actually backfire in that people don't take you as seriously.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Sorry to be the bearer of that news.
No, it was my guess. Not news, but thanks very much. I'm very much enjoying the conversation.
Thank you, Andrea. Are all teams the same, or is every team different?
Well, I think trivially, the teams are different just because the individuals that make them up are different, right?
Right.
You haven't cloned the players, so to the degree that the individuals have their impact on how the team works, I would imagine that all teams are different just for that simple reason.
And also the task demands, the chores that the team is faced with doing can really change how the people within, even the same group of people within a team, would respond.
When things are going right between a team and everyone is in sync, what is the beauty of teamwork as each one of you see it?
Well, I just love the coordination, the coordinative aspect. I'm a big football fan, and just watching the coordination in a quarterback passing to a receiver, I think there's something beautiful there in all the adjustments it takes for one person to respond to another person in the ideal way. And that's what I personally really enjoy about teams.
Yes, I mean, in a sense, you're watching intelligence in motion, right? In other words, the whole thing is moving, and it's moving intelligently. And I think that gives people pleasure to see it almost doing the optimal thing to solve the problem. And I think people like watching something that looks optimal.
I've been speaking with management and organization professor Scott Wiltermuth and Dr. John Krakauer, a professor of neurology and neuroscience at Johns Hopkins. We've been talking about teamwork, how it works, and why you can find it in so many settings on this week's Please Explain. Scott and John, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Leonard returns for Monday's show. He'll speak with Guy Lawson about hedge fund fraud, a secret market, and a mysterious cabal known as the Octopus. Then a look at the ongoing battle of what may have been Jackson Pollock's last painting, Red, Black, and Silver. Then musician Julian Tepper on his first novel, it's called Balls. Plus a how-to guide to fermenting your own foods. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Cochran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Russell Jacobs, Alex Geller, Gotcha Johns, and contributing producer Bonnie LaFave. Jason Isaac was at the audio controls. I'm John Turturro, in today for Leonard Lopate. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.